G'day and welcome to the Andrew Price Podcast, the podcast for artists looking to level up and learn tips and tricks and things and hopefully make $1 million selling NFTs. Because that is all I care about right now is making millions of dollars selling the equivalent of 3D clip art to some suckers on the internet. What is going on? I really can't figure it out. It, for the last 15 years that I've been doing 3D, the most you could sell an art piece for was like a print, like an art print for $20. And then people would be like, look at this guy selling an art print for $20. I can print it out myself. Thank you very much. And then it was like $50, you know, that's as far as it went. And people are like, I'll pay $50 for this amazing piece of art. And then seemingly overnight, you were now able to sell, honestly, some surprisingly mediocre artwork for $20,000 to random people. And they get nothing for it. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, NFTs stand for non-fungible tokens. And it uses the blockchain to basically authenticate ownership of a digital asset. So the most famous example was Beeple, who sold $3.5 million worth of artwork in a weekend through an auction. And what you get for buying one of his art pieces was, in his case, they actually gave you a physical thing. It was like this little glass thing with a digital whatever thing in it or whatever, but your real value, the real ownership of it was the token that says that you own the piece. So in the blockchain, in the cloud, wherever it exists, there's all the computers burning the midnight oil, authenticating who owns what. And somebody gets to say, I own this one piece of artwork. They get nothing for it though. So the artwork can be viewed on Instagram, it can be viewed on his website, it can be viewed in really high resolution by anyone, but the ownership is by someone else. Now, at first when I heard this, I thought, well, this is bananas, this makes no sense, and this is going to die. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought, you know, there's not really any difference between this and a physical painted piece of artwork. Now bear with me, okay? Yes, there's a physical thing, right? But the physical painting has already been, if it's worth millions of dollars, already been photographed from every angle and uploaded to art restoration websites and whatever. So you can download it in ultra high resolution. So you can have the exact same copy of the print for free. You could even print it on an amazing printer and get almost the exact same experience from a print. Yeah, you don't get the texture of the brushes, whatever, who cares? Almost the exact same experience for free. Or you can buy the print for you can buy the original for $20 million. And then that sits in a Freeport somewhere in a carefully climatized, moisture-free room for decades until they sell it to somebody else, right? So there's really no difference between the two of them. It's just that suddenly the world woke up and went, hey, digital artists are doing something. And yeah, you don't just have to buy a print. You could buy ownership. And it's really cool, actually. It's really, the more I think about it, the more I think this is actually kind of opening a new chapter in the digital art world. Because when you go to ArtStation, you can sometimes feel a little bored. I said this on Twitter once. I'm like, does anyone find ArtStation kind of boring? Like the artwork is it's good. It's technically good, but it's all samey, same. It's all sort of derivative. It's all the same sort of topics. It's environments with a character standing in front of it. It's a hot girl. It's a tank mech thing, whatever. And I think the primary reason for this is that this is the type of artwork that gets you a job, because money leads all, right? Everything follows it. So the fact that you know, in order to do 3D art as a living, you have to, someone has to be able to pay you for your work. The only work that you were able to get was making video games, making VFX shots, making whatever. And that tended to be commercial. It tended to be, yes, the movies that they were making were artistic pieces, but of course they're very formulaic and there's not really any, you know, if you want to make the next blockbuster Iron Man franchise, whatever, you kind of have to make a derivative of Iron Man, right? That's what the audience expects. So it's all sort of samey, okay? This is very new. This is literally, the bolder, the more unique, the more concept heavy. And when I say that, I mean like, it's like an interesting idea, not necessarily technically great, the almost the more successful it is. Like I've been looking at some of the prints and there's honestly some like really technically good stuff by some artists that I know and appreciate their work. And I'm like, damn, that guy's good. And then I look on their NFT page and I'm like, oh, they're not actually making that much money. That's a shame. And then I see some other people that I've never heard of before making a spinning cube in space with a pastel theme and a squiggly. The more abstract and surreal it is, the more zeros you add to the price, it seems. And then they just sell that, you know? I don't understand. I don't understand it. I feel like I'm gazing into a portal of another world where I don't understand the economy, you know? It makes no sense. This is... And I don't think it's insulting to say this, but you go to these pages, Nifty Gateway, Super Rare, any of these platforms, and you look at it. If you were to open up those tabs and then open up ArtStation, anyone would notice the difference in quality, right? There's a big difference, okay? And it's very clear that the good, amazing artists are not the ones necessarily that are selling these NFTs. So it's really bizarre. And I'm trying to figure out what is it that seems to be driving. It seems to be like it has to be an interesting, they have to have built a brand for themselves, obviously. A large Instagram following would definitely help. And the more kind of something that would impress somebody outside of the 3D art space. That's, okay, here's the thing. If it would impress somebody in the 3D art space, it's probably not going to make that much money. If it would impress a 50-year-old hedge fund investor in his yacht, I don't know, whatever, and he pulled it up on his phone and said, oh, I own this piece. If it would impress one of those guys, then it will sell for, you know, whatever. I did actually see one that I was like, okay, this is good. This is, you know, a good price. Like, I'm glad to see good art. Cornelius Damrick, he made one of his pieces that he made a couple of years ago. A spaceman in a street corner or something like that. Technically beautiful, amazing environment. It's got cool story. It's got beautiful lighting. Everything is done amazing. That sold for a whopping $200,000 and something dollars just over the last week. And I was like, all right, yeah. It's good because it was like one of the rare cases where it seemed like my expectations were aligned, you know, but I follow Nifty Gateway and all these other like art stations on Instagram because now I'm like obsessed with it. I'm like, what is going on? And you know, and every single one of them is like, what, that one, 50,000 for a little squiggle in space that spins around? What is going on? You know, when I was last in Amsterdam for the Blender conference, I went on a city tour, like a bicycle tour, of course it was. And, you know, learning about the coffee shop, the history of Amsterdam and where this came from, blah, blah, blah. And then they were talking about tulips, you know, the famous tulip, the flower of the Netherlands, right? And they said that I can't remember the exact year, but there was a tulip craze in the Netherlands where people were exchanging houses to buy one tulip. And I said to the tour guide, what? And she didn't like me. So she's like, I said, they exchanged houses for tulips. I'm like, okay, all right. I won't ask any more questions. it was a weird tour. But supposedly it was like, it was a gold rush. It was like a hysteria thing where they'd sort of inflated the value of something to the point that nobody knew what the value was anymore. And I assume it was a bubble and it just crashed, obviously, as it should. Is this that bubble? Is it? I don't know. It could be. But then, you know, by the same, and then you sort of get into like, oh, but there's no tangible goods. There's no value. It's like, does anything have any value? What tangible value is gold? It's a colorful metal. That's about it. What about a currency? It's all theoretical. What about crypto that they keep predicting will die and yet it refuses to, you know? I mean, if anything, this is the most tangible idea yet in the crypto world. Like, at least it's based on something, as opposed to just fluff. But at the same time, is it mass hysteria? Is it crazy? I don't know. It's cool. I want to make $1 million. I want to sell NFT. I said half jokingly, would anyone buy a donut NFT? But I was serious. Would anyone buy a donut NFT? Would you? Someone want to pay me for it? Huh? Do I have to make it spin and put some atmospheric music behind it? Is that what'll ramp it up? Make it look more surreal? I don't know. There is, of course, the flip side to this, which is that NFTs are apparently very, very, very bad for the environment. And actually all apparently crypto tech, whatever, is very, very bad for the environment. There was somebody who did a math. There's like a Medium post that explains it all. But supposedly to authenticate these NFT artworks, whatever, like each artwork piece is about the equivalent of one month of the average European person's carbon footprint. Like, that's how much electricity it is using, because all the machines or whatever that are doing the mining or something, they all have to authenticate it. And apparently they do it in the most inefficient way possible, like Soviet era inefficiency to authenticate it. That's using Ethereum, I think it is. There's supposed to be Ethereum 2, which is going to switch from proof of work to proof of ownership or something like that. And it's supposed to flippity flippity flop it and make it a lot more efficient. But it's going to take about a year or two or something like that for that to happen. But also, $1 million, right? I mean, how many icebergs do we need? Huh? Has anyone asked that question yet? We need all these icebergs? If anything, they look cooler when they're crumbling. No, I'm kidding. Of course, it's a big dilemma. But supposedly you can, what's that? That carbon scraping technology? Carbon storage or something I was looking at today. It was like they potentially want to get it to the point where you can invest $100 and remove a ton of CO2. So if I was Beeple, that's what I'd be telling people I'm going to do with the money. Just protect the brand. No. I'm guaranteeing I'm going to pay for the carbon footprint of this transaction from a carbon scraper or some, I don't know. It's a fun space. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Maybe we'll see less of the boring derivative stuff and more experimental, interesting stuff. And hopefully, God, get away from some of this really clip arty is really the only way to describe it. The value to my expectation, it doesn't make any sense to me, you know, like just scribble on a blackboard, make it spin and do some stuff on it and then add some objects that don't make sense in the scene and sort of throw it Salvador Dali style, but make less sense and then just rake in the millions. I don't know. But anyways, it's cool space. It's very fun. I'm watching it. And I want your money. We are going to answer some questions.
Hi, Andrew. My name is Bray from Norway. And I've been pondering for a while. What are some exercises that you can do in Blender to be productive without having to spend time figuring out what to make or what tutorial I should watch next and so on?
Oh, yeah. That's the question, yeah. You don't need subtitles, by the way, Bray. Your English pronunciation is perfectly fine. If that's why you added them. Good question, sir. Very, very good question, in fact. I think the fact that you're not going gung-ho into whatever it is you're interested in is good, because I think that is It's a painful learning experience most artists learn. It's like we all have the thing that we want to achieve, the thing that we want to do. And the fundamentals are kind of boring. They feel boring. They feel like a waste of time in order to get to where you want to go. When I started, I wanted to make a shiny red car because I used to love the Need for Speed game when I was a teenager. And I tried it and failed immediately. And I had to do a bunch of other stuff in order to get there. It took 4 years actually before I could do it. This was before YouTube, so there was not many tutorials around. But it felt like a lot. It felt like a lot of waste of time. So a lot of people don't want to do what you're asking, which is exercises. What can I actually do that will build up the skill sets in order to get there? So it depends on where you want to go. Obviously, like if you wanted to be a character artist, your path and the things that you need to exercise and focus on and strengthen those muscles are going to be different to somebody who wants to do ArcVis, architecture visualization or something. So, but I think generally most people want to create worlds. They want to create stories, whether it's a video game, whether it's a NFT, whether it's a hobby thing or whatever. It's scenes, it's settings and things like that. And, in order to get there, you need to make stuff. You need to make objects, plants, chairs, bookcases, things that you need to visualize and bring to life. And so as I explained in my donut tutorial series, that is sort of the 80-20 rule of 3D. It's like there are these main areas that apply to everything, and if you focus on those, you'll sort of do well. So as I explained in that, it's basically modeling, texturing, lighting, rendering, essentially, like those four things. Is that all of them? Yeah, I think that's all of them. So the exercises, right? You want to get good at building stuff, okay? So really your exercises should be creating things in an order of difficulty, okay? So I actually put together a little chart because I was sort of curious about this myself because I'm looking into it for 2D. Because I learned 2D in my spare time. And these exercises are really important to get to where I want to go. What are the exercises for 3D? So I put together this little chart, which I'll put on the screen now. And if you're listening, I'll just sort of read it out. But essentially, you want to be making household objects. Okay, so I've put together like four levels here. You would start with, you know, like a mug, like a coffee cup. This sort of was in the donut tutorial, right? That could sort of be done in like 2 hours. Most of the stuff in level one could be done in 2 hours. Level two would be sort of like 4-ish hours, maybe. Level three might take a day. This is for like a beginner-ish. And then level four might take you, you know, a few days to a week or something like that. But anyways, coffee cup, chess piece, microwave, right? Those sort of cover a lot of different interesting shapes. Level two, you sort of get a little bit more interesting, a little bit more technically different shapes. A doorknob, right? With the different handle sort of thing going out there. You got to deal with subsurf, topology, a fry pan, the interesting angle of the handle there makes it interesting. And you've also got a texture, the base of it, a kettle. It's sort of where you're blending like smooth shapes with some hard shapes and buttons and things. It sort of makes it a little bit complex. Then level three, you've got like a fire extinguisher, a much more simple shape, but a lot more details in the handle and the grip. Toaster, lots of buttons and smooth shapes. That's really getting technical. And then a hairdryer, which is like a nightmare to kind of model, but that's a nice challenge there. And then level four is a hand grenade. That's really testing your limits there with the sort of roundish shape with the thing and whatever. Then you got an anvil that I actually did for an old tutorial that's yet to be updated. And then finally a lantern. And those last three things have a lot of texturing in there as well. Anyways, if you follow that, I mean, those are just ideas, okay? But those are what I would consider in order of difficulty, some good jumping off points, okay? If you don't want to do a hairdryer, you could do something similar, you know, of a similar form or a similar shape or something like that. But the idea is essentially just, it's like going to the gym. You have to push a muscle and take it to its limit, to its failure, in order to rip it and then build it stronger, essentially. So it's just like that for each of these items. It's taking on a slightly bigger weight every single time you do it and learning a different range of things. Because that's the thing. It's not like, you know, the sort of the school system of education is kind of like checking a box. And it can kind of feel like that when you're self-learning too. Like, I'm going to watch the videos in this order. And like, I'm going to learn how to hold pencil. And I'm going to learn how to do a brush stroke. I'm going to do that. And then you just keep moving down it in a linear order. But that's not how it is. You have to, what is it? The atelier approach? Atelier approach is, it's repeating stuff. It's then, it's going back to the start and redoing it and spending like another week on perspective and then another week on lighting, even though you did it 3 months ago, and keep testing and hitting each of these areas again and again to build it up. Because if you make one coffee cup, that doesn't mean you know how to model. It means you know how to make a coffee cup. When you make a chair, they look kind of similar, but they each have their own problems. And one chair has different problems than another chair. The chair that I'm sitting on, this Aeron office chair, is even more problems. That's a nightmare compared to a different chair. So that's what it is. It's adding more weight. It's building up your muscles and learning new things as you go along. So I definitely think that will help. For most people, that's sort of a good idea. I'll call it the level up challenge if you want to do that. So I'll put the link to click. Download that image if you want to see it in a high-res version. And if you're listening to this, the link is in the show notes as well. But that is what I would recommend. All right. Next question here from Ethan. Take it away, Ethan.
Hey, Andrew. This is Ethan Johnson out of Alabama in the United States. And I wanted to ask, after I followed your donut tutorial and a bunch of other tutorials on YouTube and one paid intermediate tutorial, and I've also signed up for your This Week in 3D. And I've also started to sell some of my models. But I was wondering what you would suggest to do to keep learning after I've gone through a bunch of tutorials and even a paid tutorial. I think this could help a lot of other beginners to intermediates as well. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good question, Ethan. You're a young fella looking to scale up in the world, get technically proficient. I don't know. No, it's good. Yeah, listen, Ethan, it does sound a little bit like what I was just talking about with the checkboxes, right? You know, approaching learning like I watched the donut tutorial, I've watched the intermediate tutorial, I've watched this. And it's, you know, obviously you don't want to go like and like redo the donut tutorial if you don't have to, but you have not necessarily aced each of those topics. You haven't, you know, aced modeling because you've made one coffee cup or you've made one donut or you've, you know, watched an intermediate course on whatever it was that you watched it on, how to make a rocket ship or something. I'm sure you've learned a lot. I don't mean to say this to dishearten you, but this is something I've learned myself as well. It's like, as humans, we want to feel like progress is made. And so we're checking off boxes and we go, yay, I finished. I've done that. And then it's like, yes, I finished the lighting. I finished this. I've aced all of the components, right? Because you've checked the box. But it hasn't necessarily happened, okay? As I said before, you model one chair, doesn't mean you know how to model all the chairs. Every chair is different, and they all have their own challenges. So what I would say is you need to have a North Star, okay? You need to have something that you are aiming towards. So it's likely the thing that got you into 3D in the first place, right? So maybe you want to make a video game, or you want to make a character, or you want to make a VFX shot, Archviz, or maybe you just want to get rich like Beeple and make the kind of work that he does, okay? That's your North Star, okay? So you should try to do that. If you're not sure what to focus on next, try to do the thing that you want to do, okay? And that's like, whoa, I'm not ready for that. And it's like, okay, but why? That's what you need to focus on, okay? So maybe you give it a shot, okay? Maybe you try to make a, you know, finished, you know, image like Beeple with an environment and, you know, crazy sci-fi stuff or whatever, you know, make one of those things. It's likely by the end of it, you will have already noticed some areas that you struggle with. But also once you finish at the end of it, you've got a finished piece. You can pause and reflect. So I mentioned this at the end of my Forest Cabin in the Woods tutorial. But at the end of a project, it's good to do a post-mortem where you open up a notepad file and you look back on the project that you just did and write down what it is that you could do better next time. What went wrong? What was more challenging? What was areas that didn't work out as well as you had hoped? And just write it out. It only takes 10 minutes, but it'll save you so much in the future for your next project, right? So that usually, yeah, I definitely recommend leaving a gap between when you finish the artwork and doing the postmortem. It'll refresh your eyes. You know, you can do something else. And then you look at it and you'll be like, oh, actually, that's got a lot of problems that I didn't see at first. So doing that will definitely help. And if you don't know, if you still don't know, like, what are my areas of weakness, show it to someone who is experienced. Try to join any like Facebook group that offers critiques, or message boards, or wherever it is that you can get feedback. And, you know, ask. I'm open to honest feedback. You can't hurt my feelings. Please be honest. What's wrong with this image? And people will tell you once you say that. And then those are your areas to focus on. So you should then have a list of areas to focus on. Maybe it's like organic modeling, or maybe it's sculpting, or you didn't understand rigging very well and it was a problem because, you know, you need to be able to make a character in the future, and if you don't know rigging, it's going to cause all these issues. So you've got then a list of things to focus on. So then you can go and watch some rigging tutorials or some lighting tutorials if that's the area that you need to focus on, and re-watch them, right? Like re-watch my lighting tutorial series, for example. That's all the theory and understanding what lighting does to the shot. And re-familiarize yourself with the content, because I do this myself. Forget what was in a tutorial. Forget what the original lesson was. I mentioned it in my 7 Habits of Effective Artists speech that, like, one of the problems I had when I was learning to draw was I watched all these tutorials. I read these books on like how to draw a face and whatever else and a head. And then I was doing it and I noticed I wasn't getting any better. And then I went back and I rewatched some of the material, and I had misremembered one of the measurements. And so I was drawing the heads like way wider than they needed to be. And all the measurements were screwed up because of that one thing. And it was simply, I just forgot. I mean, I didn't forget. I probably didn't record it in my head correctly in the first place. So you do it all the time. You watch the thing and you go, I got it. Because when you do it, when you're watching the tutorial, you're mimicking what the person is doing. And so you feel more confident than you actually should be. And then when you go and rewatch it, you go like, oh, I forgot all about that. And oh, I rushed through that section and I didn't stop there. And I completely glossed over the rendering or the compositing or all these steps that I had forgotten. Because, hey, our memories can only be as good as our brain, right? And humans' brains aren't very good at remembering things. So, So you'll then have learned a bunch of that stuff. And then you want to focus and do an exercise specifically on something like lighting, okay? So you want to take one of your old models and try and light it 10 different ways, okay? And this sounds like a waste of time. Like, okay, the object is to finish a piece, so why am I lighting it 10 times? Well, the exercise is lighting, okay? So you're forcing yourself to come up with 10 different ways to light this character. Well, you'll learn a lot. You'll see, like, I light it this way and I do this background and pull the camera in like this or whatever. It creates this sort of look. When I pull it back and I change the lighting and do the opposite, it creates a sort of darker look. And you're forced to come up with different variations. You need to learn a lot through the process. That's what an exercise is. It's not creating a finished piece. It's purely for you. And yes, it doesn't have the same satisfaction of being able to post something cool on Instagram and getting a bunch of likes that don't matter. But it is working towards your future. It is building up. It's strengthening your muscles. And it's definitely what I would recommend that you do, Ethan. But that is a very good question, man. Like, I hope I didn't sound too dismissive. Because I think, as you said, it is completely in line with how most artists feel. They feel stuck and like, I'm not improving and I don't know why. And I've done all the right things. I've moved up in sort of difficulty. But I think a lot of self-learning really comes down to how often you pause and reflect and really analyze what it is that you've learned. Look at your progress and go, am I improving? What are the areas that I am weak in? Because most artists, probably 99 out of 100, do not do this. So if you do it, you will start improving far faster than anyone else. Hope that helps you, Ethan. Before we move to the next question, this episode was sponsored by my company, Polygon. Polygon is to help artists create better renders faster, and we do that by giving you access to world-class textures, HDRs, models, and brushes that you need to build amazing scenes. So our specialty is textures. We have the most experienced, awesome team of texture artists in the world that it is their job to create all the different types of textures, whether it is photo scans, whether it's procedural, whatever it is, our aim is to give you the textures that you need when you hit search. That they are seamless, they are sharp, and they are super high res, and they work out of the box without needing to fix any problems. That is the aim with Polygon. It's to save you time. So the web address is poligon.com, and you can sign up for a monthly or an annual subscription, and the textures work whether you're using Blender, 3ds Max, Cinema 4D, Maya. All our models and everything are compatible with those and all of the major rendering engines as well. And of course, textures work for all those with our plugins that make it even easier to use the assets. So that is Polygon, P-O-L-I-I-G-O-N, to make renders, make better renders faster.
Hello, Andrew. I'm Daniel from England, and my question is, how can I get out of bad habits that I've developed in my workflow, and how can I relearn parts which I think are holding me back from getting better? Thank you.
Very good question, Daniel. We've all got them, bad habits. And it's good sign that you've recognized the bad habits and you want to relearn them. When you have developed, a habit, okay, just a habit on itself, it means that you've done something so often that your brain doesn't need to really think about it anymore, right? Like, think about the idea of like reversing out of your driveway, okay? You need to get your keys, you got to unlock the door, you got to get in the car, you got to close the door, you got to put your seatbelt on, you got to turn the engine, or you got to put your foot on the brake, park, turn the engine on, then you need to put it into reverse, you need to look in the mirror, you need to go back, whatever. When you've been driving for longer than a couple of years, whatever, you can do that in a daze. You can sometimes find yourself driving and going, I don't even remember, did I say goodbye to my wife? Did I take my lunch? How did I get here? What was the morning like? I feel like I've been on autopilot. Because that's what a habit is, okay? And your brain is good at that. And it's actually like talked about it in a few books I was reading, like the development of the brain. Like, if we didn't have that, we would not be able to do the things that we do. Everything would be a struggle. In fact, you can look at people that have lost that part of the brain that makes, you know, the habit forming things, and everything is a struggle. It's like they got to learn how to like open a door again, right? Because like the muscles don't know how to move in that, you know, haven't memorized it. It's crazy. It's amazing what the brain does. Anyways, a long way to say, when you have a habit, it means that you are now doing something, you've done it enough that you aren't thinking about it properly anymore. To relearn a bad habit essentially means to stop, first of all. And check that you're doing it the right way to begin with. And if you know it's a bad habit, it's likely, you know, you're not. So just like what I suggested for the past question, go back and watch the source material, watch the expert book, tutorial, whatever it is, of the person that is teaching it the right way, because there's a lot of steps and it's likely you've forgotten some of them. The second thing is to slow down, okay? If you are, let's say, modeling and you every time you model, you end up with just like ugly looking stuff and you don't know why it's ugly and you don't really know the correct way to do it. And every time you model something, it comes out ugly. It's likely that you're just rushing through it, right? Because it's probably likely you don't enjoy modeling, which is not unusual. it's almost a mathematical problem more than an artistic one. It's, it's not fun for most people. But so because of that, it's like you're probably sort of rushing through it. Like, I need to model this TV remote so that I can finish the lounge room, and it's a painter. And it's like, that's kind of yucky, or I got to hide it, whatever. But to slow down and think about, how do I get the shape of this TV remote? What are the problems here? And what are the problems down the road if I don't stop and think about it now, okay? If I just start with a cube and then another cube and then do a bunch of, you know, edge loop cuts or whatever, and then take a bunch of the holes out and sort of extrude them in or up, is that going to cause problems when I use a subsurf modifier? Does that matter? Is this the sort of thing that could even just be a texture with the buttons? Maybe I could make it an Apple TV remote and save myself a bunch of time. It's only got a few buttons on it. Stop and pause and think about the challenges that are involved there. And am I doing it the correct way? And that's really it. I mean, you've got to force yourself to relearn it. I know this firsthand, like when I've been doing 2D drawings, you rush it. You're like, I know how to do a head. I've done heads before. I've known, that's all I do is head. And it feels painful to like do it slowly, okay? But I forced myself to do it recently and to actually like for every brush stroke, stop before I do the stroke and check in relation to measuring it against three other things, like from the edge of the ear, the edge of the nose, the edge of the mouth. Is this line where it needs to be? And sadly, 8 times out of 10, it's not. I was about to make a mistake because I was going to rush it. Okay. So that is a bad habit that needs to be relearned. And to do that, you have to stop. You have to slow down and think about what it is you're doing and where you need to be. So I hope that was helpful. I think we got room for another question right at the end of this little podcast here, because I feel like this is going to be a short podcast without it. So let's do another question here. And I'm just going to pick one at random. Ethan. Is this another Ethan? Let's have a look.
Hello, Andrew. My name is Ethan. And my question is, how can I know if the work I'm doing isn't causing me to improve in my art skills? And if I figure out that I'm not improving, how can I get back to the point where I am improving again? Thank you.
Yeah, I actually think it's probably very similar to the questions that we've just done. How to know if you're not improving? If you look at your previous artworks in a row and you don't know if you're improving, for one, it could just be that the subjects are so different. Maybe you're modeling a camera here and then the next one you're doing a grassy knoll and then another one you're doing a spaceship. It could be they're so different that maybe you can't really tell if things are getting better. But it could also be that maybe you need a third party, an interpreter to look at your works and see whether or not you are improving. Artwork to artwork, you often won't see big improvements, right? It's not a linear path, unfortunately, for most people. But overall, if you looked over like a month of work, you should not be seeing the same issues across all of them. So for starters, maybe you should focus on one single subject for a while. My little challenge that I just mentioned, doing similar sort of objects and seeing if you've got the same problems in all of them. Like the mesh looks soft and doesn't have the detail where it needs to be in all of them. It means you're not improving. But yeah, a third party, somebody who is skilled, a Facebook group or somebody that is better than you, whatever, that you can sort of reach out and get criticisms will be able to help you. And then how can you get to a point that you are improving? It's through exercising. It's through reflection on your skills, where you are, and recognizing the areas that you need to improve on. And realizing that the box you think you checked, you probably didn't, you know? Or you didn't check all the areas of it, right? There's modeling. I'm going to say it for the third or fourth time for this podcast. But you've modeled a few things. Every new thing you model is a new challenge almost, unless you've done so many of them that almost nothing surprises you anymore. It's not a checkbox situation. It's, going back and attacking it. Like, treat it like an attack. It's like you've got an immune system, right? That sort of seeks out the things that are problems in your body and attacks them. The white blood cells, right? That's the one. I've seen the visualizations in the adverts of the little white cells whooshing around the tubes of your body, and then they go attack, and they go, brrr. It's like that. So think of it like that. Okay. You've got a bunch of problems. We all got problems, right? You got modeling problems. You got texturing problems. You don't know how to do simulations. You don't know how to make a tree. You don't know whatever, right? And you don't need to know all of them. Okay. If you want to be a character artist, you don't need to know half of those things. You need to know about anatomy. You need to know about gesture, posture, poses. You need to know all those extra things. Okay. But they're all different problems. Okay. And you've got to attack them. You got to really focus on it, figure out how do I get better at just this thing. And it's likely not by doing a finished piece. It's likely not something that you can post on Instagram. It's something that is a private reflection that only you or your friends or whatever who are going to see, look over your shoulder, that only you are going to focus on. And it's just for you, because it means that your next piece, you've actually really carefully, slowly assessed it and gotten better at it. There's actually a book I'm reading at the moment called The Talent Code, which is very interesting. And it's about sort of deliberate practice and this idea of, like, you know, athletes and musicians and whatever, that there are a few places in the world that seem to be able to just, like, churn out top performers. And so it sort of investigates each of those places, talks to the coaches, talks to the teachers to find out how are they teaching students and basically creating superstars, you know, on mass. And a large part of it comes to this idea of deliberate practice, this idea of you know, taking a look at someone's work, taking a look at your own work, whatever it is. And a large part of it is this idea of deliberate practice, which is really like a conscious awareness of what it is you're doing, each brushstroke, each click, and thinking about every move that you're making. Am I doing it the right way? And how can I improve upon the last time that I did it? And it's interesting when you think, but that's every practice. It's actually not. When I force myself to do it with drawing, it's a slow, methodical process, and it is actually exhausting. It's really hard to do that. In fact, you can really only do it for about an hour. In fact, that's kind of what they say. It's like an hour to 3 hours. Most people are too, like, the brain can't focus for much longer than that. So a lot of what you're doing, especially if you're doing it all day, is not deliberate practice. It is habits. And so it is, not surprisingly, something you're not going to get better at when it is a habit. It's an interesting book if you're interested in that book, The Talent Code. I definitely recommend it. But anyways, sort of trailed off towards the end there, but that is my advice for you, Ethan. And that concludes our podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have a question, send it to blenderguru.com/podcast question. It is for video questions. I want your questions, guys. I keep checking the Dropbox folder going, like, I hope I got some juicy questions, some interesting questions this week. And, there's not that many, surprisingly. So, because there's a video element. See, I sort of weed out the people who aren't that keen. Someone sent in a video with a sock puppet. And I'm like, yeah, that's a creative way to get around the video constraint. but anyways, all you need to do is take out your phone. You've got a phone in your pocket, selfie mode, hit record. Ba-dook. Hey, Andrew, I'm from wherever. This is my question. And then just read out your question. And if it's something interesting, then it'll be on the podcast. And if you've sent in a question, don't be discouraged if I haven't answered it. I am storing them in a folder and I'm categorizing them by similarity so that I can do episodes on just those topics. So it might be something that's covered in the future. Thank you all for listening. Subscribe on Spotify. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes if that is your area. And I will see you in the next episode. Bye.